الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها الذين آمنوا كتب عليكم الصيام كما كتب على الذين من قبلكم لعلكم تتقون أياما معدودات. صدق الله مولانا العظيم. As far as our ma'amulat are concerned, we should try and read every morning at least the first 10 ayahs of Surah Kahf, and at night the last 10 ayahs. If we can read the whole surah every day, Mubarak, much more better. But at least try on Jummah to read the whole surah. It is coming the hadith that it is a protection against the Dajjal. And the Dajjal is the god of materialism. He will become in such a way that he will offer dunya. And at the time when people will be desperate for dunya, for food, etc., and he said, I will give food, there will be drought, and he said, I will make it rain, and he'll do that. And those who are weak in Iman, or who haven't got Iman, they will fall for it. And that will be when the Dajjal will come. But already the effect of materialism, if we see our lives, though we are living dini lives, but we are living for dunya. We, all of us, want a smart house, smart phone, smart car, clothes, fashion, brand names, holidays, all these things. We are, our hearts are in these things already. So by reading Surah Kahf, Allah will save us from that. And a person at dunya is from, it's a beautiful example is given. It's like a ship. We need it in order to travel. And the sea is the dunya. If the water comes into the ship, as long as the water, you use the dunya to travel and reach your akhirat, you are safe. But when the dunya comes into you, then the ship is going to sink, all will drown. So therefore, we must use dunya, but that keep 1 cent, 5 cents in your pocket, in your top pocket, or keep a check or your credit card, which is loaded with millions of rands, right in your top pocket next to your heart. But don't keep 1 cent in your heart. So use the dunya, but don't have the love of dunya. And then use it correctly, where it's supposed to be used. So materialism is one big god. And after that will come the god of power, Yajuj and Majuj. And one is the real Allah, who is Allah of everything. And everything is in the control of Allah. So through an easy way for us to get saved from all these fitna, to read Surah Kahf. Try and read the first 10 ayahs every morning, the last 10 ayahs every night. And Jummah, try and read the whole surah, inshallah. With regard to our talk yesterday about food, etc., there are two things which we all have to consider. One is we must make sure that only halal enters our mouth. And the other is, like we are invited, we're going to eat at somebody's place. Now, if it's a Muslim, and he's a Muslim, then it's not permissible to ask him, is your food halal, etc. It's not right, he's a Muslim, he's going to give you halal. But where your doubts are more greater, then you have to see what you have to do. So, one side is halal only. And this is such a thing, for example, you have to take your medication every night. And your medication happens to be a sweet syrup. Now somebody is to remove the sweet syrup and put poison and sweeten it. Now you drink that poison. So you don't get the guna of committing suicide. But you are going to die. The effect of it is going to take place. According to Allah's system of asbab, Allah's qudrat is above everything. But the normal system is you will die. So if you eat haram and you ate it thinking it is halal, you won't get the guna, but the effect will take place in you. Haram will make you make haram. Haram will destroy your good thoughts and bring evil thoughts. your akhlaq, your character, your way of thinking, everything, it will have an effect. So a person must be very careful. So, and keeping the respect and honor of a Muslim, that is also so important. But all these things, just like to make ghibat is haram. But there are certain places where it becomes faras to make ghibat. Like, for example, you know somebody is going to murder somebody. And then you inform that person that this person is coming, is speaking bad about it. He's coming to murder you. Or somebody asks you, somebody asks advice for a proposal for a boy, girl, that how is the other party, the boy, girl, and you know they have got bad habits in them. At that time, it isn't husn al-zan, and it isn't just speaking good, but that time it's compulsory for you to tell them in a suitable way. So they are both sides of it, and we have to be very careful. An easy way is that the first one, very, very important is, we must make this dua. That Allahumma jannibna haram haythu kan wa ayna kan wa inda man kan wa ma kan. Oh Allah, save me from haram. Allahumma jannibna haram haythu kan, whatever it is, wherever it is. Inda man kan, by whoever it might be. Ma kan, whatever it is. Oh, save me from all haram. So that dua we read, inshallah, by the barakah of it, Allah will save us. There were those wuzurgs who could clearly see, and then they would not touch the haram. They Allah gave them. But everyone is not at that level that we can clearly see. And the respect and honor of a Muslim is also very necessary. So one is, we should make our homework before time and find out. Don't go and eat at such a place where you have your doubt. For any reason, especially like if we are in Jama'ah and people invite us, many da'wahs are refused. We tell them first, you give 3 days, for example. Or you promise to make a niyat of 40 days, something like that. So there are many ways that we can get around it. So if we are quite sure, or the doubts are more, then we have to take our precautions. We can't just go by just presuming and assuming. That is not sufficient. Once we were eating, and it was a Darul Uloom, the Jalsa, and we had eaten already, and I was also sure, you don't have to ask questions yet, we didn't ask questions. But after that, we were sitting and talking, and I asked that, your meat, where you get from? So this is from the butcher. So I say, and the sauce from the butcher. So the person, the responsible person, he said, I presume it's all right. So that is not sufficient. You have to make sure. And especially when you are not eating only, you are feeding also. What are you feeding people? So you have to be sure what you are feeding people. One of our students, he graduated here, and he was very much in study, keen on university studies. Then we discouraged him, but finally after he graduated, he went and he stayed on campus. He came and visited one day, and he explained all what he's doing. Then he's eating in the cafeteria of the on the campus. And so I asked, they must be having accommodation for halal, also halal menu, because many Muslim students, he say, no, they don't have. So I say, you still eat that? He said, yeah, I assume it's halal. Just by assuming, how can it be halal? And there can be no doubt that will be pork also, that will be served, everything. So we have to be very, very careful. One couple, elderly, pious couple, many years ago, were visiting Malaysia. Malaysia, Muslim country, don't have doubt. And you see a restaurant, and the name of the restaurant also, some Muslim name. So they enjoyed the kebabs, the meatballs very much. So the last day, the wife told the husband, go and ask them if they prepare to give us the menu, the ingredient, the recipe, how they prepare. So he went. The first thing they told, so much, you use so much of pork. They got a shock of their life. They were religious people, and they didn't expect it at all. So a person has to think what he's eating. And he's putting it in his stomach, and from where the brain will also start thinking accordingly, the heart, the body will act accordingly. So So we should try and find out, and we can say that we got a diet restriction. I can't eat chicken, for example. And you make your niyat, I can't eat doubtful or haram chicken. You make your niyat. So if you can excuse us, and they say, no, we'll arrange for you other things, then it's all right. There are many ways of killing the cat, and we have to worry of what we have to do. We have to do the right thing. We can't just make it easy and keep the balance and be very concerned. People might call you extreme, but a person who's extreme, that he must not eat haram, it's just to his good, it's not anything bad. It doesn't mean now you just start eating all junk food or so, just because people are going to call me extreme. Your health, if you know what your health, and the health depends on the food you eat. Your spiritual health, it depends whether it is haram, whether it is tayyib. So very, very important. Allah give us that concern, and give us also the tawfiq, and to maneuver ourselves correctly. What I usually do when we go and do on our safar, which is also, we are very vulnerable. So we tell them that we won't have chicken, that we avoid chicken. So then there are many other things, fish they eat. Mutton is usually not subject to all this as much as what chicken is. There are vegetables, there are dals, etc. And some who wish to self-accommodate, they understand. And they say, we will hand slaughter ourselves. We will get, and some go to the extra mile. We will get the farm chicken. So you stand to your advantage, because you wanted to save yourself. And of course, when the food is put down, and then you ask what the source of the food. And now what can be done? This should be done before time. You in Jamaat, for example, somebody wants to invite you. Now when they invite you, at that time you tell them that we prefer staying away from chicken or whatever else it might be. So you take your precautions accordingly. You are invited by somebody, so you tell them that I can accept, but my diet, I've got a diet that I follow. So then you tell them what your diet is, and then you can, according to that you go. Haji Ahmed Nafud Asab Rahmatullah Alayh, for his precaution, he only ate dal, mung dal. That is the one dal that hasn't got carefully. And just a little boil, not even all the spices. Just a boil, he should have that. Hazrat Maulana Siddiq Ahmed Bandwi Rahmatullah Alayh, he's almost spent his life, at least the latter part of his life, only on eggs. He should just eat eggs, that's all he used to eat. So there are those people who are concerned of what they eat, and they took all the precaution of it. So it doesn't mean that you just have to go wild, and doesn't mean on the other side you don't respect the feelings and everyone feels what we are eating, no matter what they eat. They are convinced that we are eating halal. So what's your problem with that? Otherwise, and what they are eating, any and everything, but they are happy just because they thinking it's halal. One is the habit of the Arabs, that they normally, when the food comes, they say Bismillah. And that is like when you are slaughtering, you say your Bismillah. So whatever the meat is, by your Bismillah, it becomes halal. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't become halal just by saying, you must say Bismillah when you start eating. But then Bismillah doesn't make the haram halal. It has to be halal food. In this context, one which we should be also very concerned, it is halal, it can be halal, but what is stun food? Stun, that is brain dead. They kill the animal, or semi-kill it, not fully, by stunning it. Stunning it is in different ways, whether it's an electric shock, or whether it is passed through water, which has got the electric current in it. And the latest now, in Canada, they have started where they send it through a gas chamber. They feel that that water is also too cruel. And this is in the nature of the kuffar. They think according to zahir. يَعْلَمُونَ ظَاهِرًا مِنَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. So they see the animal suffers when you slaughter it. So they go by that. And we don't want the animal to suffer. And we see the animal is suffering, so we stun the animal, then it's now brain dead, so it doesn't show the signs of suffering. But doesn't mean it doesn't suffer. There was a report which was widespread, everyone had access to it, of a university in Germany where they had done experiments on the animal to see how much pain it suffered according to the various ways of killing an animal. One is the most common, the slaughtering. Then there are other ways also in which animals are killed. So they did a study. When we happened to be there in Bonn, which is the university town of Germany, and I was going to speak on this subject in an informal gathering, they told me, let us tell you, we live here, we go to university. We got the report first hand. That was a report you received, but we are in part of the university. And they explained that the animal that is done, for example, which is one of the common way in the world, and the one that is just slaughtered without stunning. And so they put electrodes on the brains of the animal to measure the amount of pain. They only did the study to see how much of pain the animal suffers. And so they measured it with that. And they found to their utter surprise that those animals which are stunned, the pain was so much that the level it could reach to, it was hitting up at that. In other words, the pain is more than that also. And the animal that is slaughtered, it was almost zero the pain. And the explanation is very clear. We see with our eyes also. You slaughter a chicken, kurbani time you slaughter a sheep or goat. After that, it shakes, kicks its leg. And its wing, its tail also it shakes violently. And the bird, a chicken, its wings, it will flutter them. So what comes to our mind? The animal is suffering. But it's not that. That is just zahir what we are seeing with our eyes. What the reality of it is, they only needed to find pain. And they found that this pain was in the slaughtering system. Almost zero. Very, very little pain. And the most pain was in the stunning. When the stunning is like somebody takes a half a brick and throws it on your head and you go in a concussion. And how you are confused and you don't know what is happening. Like that is what happens to that bird. So when slaughtering, we slaughter here at the throat. And the slaughtering process of Islam is important. Islam is defined in detail the slaughtering process. It must be at the throat. And then there are four vessels that have to be slaughtered, that have been to be severed. The food pipe, the wind pipe, and the two veins which carry blood, which are just alongside them. Out of the four, at least three must be cut. Otherwise, the animal doesn't become halal. So the three that must be cut, of course, you must try and slaughter all four. And it's not difficult. Just with a simple, sharp knife, and have strength in your hand. And then you slaughter, and all four get cut. And also, Sharia has pointed out that it is makruh that you slaughter the whole head of a goat and a bull. It's almost out of the question that you can slaughter the whole head. But the chicken, very commonly it happens. Your hand is powerful, strong, and the poor little chicken, small, thin neck, the whole head, and many times it gets cut off. But it is makruh. The reason for that is also the beauty of Islam and the knowledge which Islam has shed in the Quran Sharif, in the Hadith, that all the nerves run from the brain to the body. And they all run here in the back, the nervous system, in the spine. That's why the spine is so delicate. An operation on the spine is very, because if they have to interfere, just touch one nerve, it can cause a terrible damage to the body. All of them run at the back. So the nerve that carries pain, that you pain you feel. Pain also is not at the place we feel it. It's in the brain. Everything is controlled by the brain and by the nervous system. So all these nerves also run here at the back to the whole body. So if you cut the whole neck off, then all the nerves are cut off. So therefore, that animal doesn't give any message now to the rest of the body. Animal that is stunned also, that the brains are not functioning, is now stunned. It's the brain cell in concussion. It doesn't function. So therefore, that animal won't kick its legs, won't its wings, it won't flutter. But the animal that the nerves are still running, are still intact, that animal will kick it. So when you slaughter a year, all the blood comes out. The heart, which is placed here, more or less, different animals suffer. The heart, one of the main functions of the heart is to pump blood. It's pumping blood 24 hours. And in the blood is oxygen. And that is keeping us alive. So it pumps the blood, and it, when it comes to the air, and the brain is the main place which needs blood. If it doesn't get blood, oxygen for 1 second, you can get a stroke, you can become paralyzed, etc. So the brain, when the blood is coming out here, so the brain is not getting blood, so it sends immediately messages, and the system is intact at the back, the nervous system. So all the parts of the body get the message that our head of our body, the head, which is the mind, the brain, our head, the head of the country, the head of the body, it needs blood, and we have to supply blood. So each one starts working very hard to send out blood. And that is why they keep their day. There's a process of sending blood as much as possible. The sheep, etc., where it stays widely also. All that to send blood all the time. The wings of the fowl is also to send blood. Everyone, we have to work now. Our king, our head of the body, head of the state, wants blood from us. And as they send blood, but it's all coming out here. And when it comes out here, there are two great effects that take place. One is the most healthiest animal to eat is the one that has got no blood in it. Now in this whole process, all the blood came out. Second is the most tastiest meat is in which there is no blood. So all that blood came out. And you can check for yourself the normal chicken, the takeaway and their chicken, which are all the stunned ones, normal. You see that the bones are black also, and the bones are soft also. And the chicken that has not been stunned, the bones are white, and they are hard, solid hard they are. And this, in this other process, so that blood which didn't come out, when the animal was stunned, all the blood remained in the body. It goes into the meat also, and it goes into the bones also, and suffers. And unfortunately, many of us enjoy chewing the bone and getting the taste out. It's all the blood that we are chewing, and that is coming, which is most unhealthy. So the Islamic system is the most perfect system, where all the blood comes out, and the animal is, that meat is the most healthiest. Then the other terrible thing is in the normal commercial slaughterhouses, these big companies where they slaughter, one is they stun. The second is after that, before they, when they de-feather the chicken, remove the feathers, they put it into boiling water, and that is controlled at a certain temperature. But the effect of that is that the intestines and the dirt in the stomach, that it melts it, and that mixes also with the meat, and it mixes with the bones also. And when you slaughter yourself, and before, even people at home, they also put the chicken in boiling water. So to pull out the feather is easy, but that is not permitted in Sharia. So in Sharia, you take out the whole skin with the feathers if you want to, or you pull out all the feathers. And you pull out all the feathers, so either of the two you do. So in that case, then this one was the blood that went into, then the stomach's dirt, all what is in the intestine, by putting it in that boiling water, that mixes with the blood, and mixes with the meat and with the bones. So that is the result of that. So now it's slaughtered, and according to Sharia, there was still life in that chicken. And another very great danger, not a definite thing, is all the chicken definitely, that's a definite thing, they can't stand withhold the same level of the stunning. Some die before that. Somebody, you give him one punch and he dies. and somebody, you give him a good beating and he's still living. The resistance of everyone is different. So every chicken is not the same. Some are dead already. And you are slaughtering a dead chicken. That is no, there's no question of it being halal. And if it is living and you slaughter it, and Sharia says you slaughter 3 or 4 of the vessels, so it is halal. But it has been stunned. And all the other harm is in there. So we have to consider all that harm which is in there already. So by stunning, all that harm comes into the chicken. And by slaughtering, and the pain the animal feels. And in the Quran Sharif it comes, and what knowledge the Quran Sharif is there. كُلَّمَا نَضِجَتْ بَدَّلْنَاهُمْ جُلُودًا غَيْرَ جُلُودِهَا. When it comes in the Quran Sharif, in Jahannam this will be the punishment. That whenever they will be burnt, and the skins will have burnt out, then we will change them with other skins. And the reason that is given there, Allahu Akbar, is that the pain the body feels is only skin deep. And this anyone can see. You go for a blood test. Perhaps everyone went for a blood test. You only feel the prick, the pain, when the needle pierces the skin. Once now this needle is in the skin, or somebody is giving you an injection, you only feel the pain when it just pricks your skin. Once it passes the skin, then there is no pain. Now they are administering the medicine, or they are drawing out the blood, but you are not feeling pain now. So in Jahannam also will be the same. The pain will be only on the skin. And there the object is to punish the person. So the skin will be repeatedly changed. Hadrat Ibn Abbas radiallahu ta'ala anhu said, word is called on this eve that in one moment 80 times the skin will be changed. So that you can feel that pain all the time. So the pain the chicken feels when you slaughter was only when it, that the skin got cut. Therefore when they monitored it, they found it was very little. The minute the skin is cut, then it doesn't feel pain anymore. Now it looks what it looks like pain is actually sending blood to the headquarters, to the head. The head wants it and the head sends the message. And if you cut the whole neck off, then all the nerves are cut and it can't send the message. So Islam system, and yeah, at the madrasa also we have Qurban and the SPCA. They come every year without fail. And we got our directions, directives, they're printed and put there on. And what they see, how we are slaughtering, they say we will advise other people to slaughter. Our regulations are not so much as you adhere to your, to animal prevention of harm to animals. And we, you adhere more to that than what we. And it's not we, it is all from Hadith. All the teachings of Hadith, that don't sharp the animal, the knife in front of the animal. Don't slaughter one animal in front of another animal. Don't skin an animal in front of the other animal. All those directions. And clear, basically it has come in the Hadith, that when you kill, kill in a good way. So even if you have to kill, but that also kill in a good way. Don't be cruel in your killing also. So Islam's teaching and the slaughtering also is 100% perfect. Then we don't have to suffer from a complaint that our slaughtering and compared to the stunning, stunning is more humane. That it's only you don't see the suffering. But that suffering is million times more than what slaughtering is. So Allah give us tawfiq to understand. So this is a very important subject and very important to see that we eat halal. Alhamdulillah, in the madrasa, we had this concern all the time when we were, different things we are doing. At the moment we got a very good system where, alhamdulillah, with no problem, very easy. And it's an easy, and we are trying to make it a model that everyone can use it in every town. So that everywhere, you just need one dedicated person. And you can have, you can supply halal to everyone. And I was very surprised myself. I accepted and I admitted that for halal, it will cost you more. And that also, if it costs you more, doesn't matter. How much don't we waste on so many other things? On so many undesirable, unhealthy things in our menus. How much? If you spend a little more for halal, which is good for you, for your deen, for your dunya, your health, what's the difference? We're spending so much on holidays, to spend a little bit for halal, what's the difference? But alhamdulillah, we saw that it's not the case. The main thing is, just take out the profit margin. And if you're doing it for commercial, you have to keep the profit margin. But just limit that profit. You'll still live comfortably, and you'll be able to supply at a good price. But all these things, the profit thing, health care, the medicine is not the medicine that's expensive. It's not the doctor's fees and all that. It is the big profit they're making. So nobody in any business needs such a big profit. You make a profit, business is done for profit. Reasonable profit is definitely by no means, but you don't have to kill the people in order to make your profit. So Allah give us tawfiq inshallah. And if this can start, be started in every town, it is possible. And all the people can easily have access to good halal, but their object is not that they are in a they go in dilemma and they have to supply this chicken. Their object is they want to feed us halal. Their whole object is they want to, and they will do it through Muslim hands. They know when they supply, if they have to tell us this is halal, and all non-Muslims are working, no Muslim is going to accept that. So they get the Muslims to do it. But we are fully, according to their agenda, we are doing everything. It is all what they want us to do. And there are deep discussions in this, lengthy discussions. Many people did investigations when they do on-the-spot inspection, and everything was completely negative. So everyone will be very concerned with what he eats. So Allah Ta'ala give us tawfiq, inshallah. And then the other roza that we have to keep, one was roza of the eyes, of the tongue, of the ears, the heart and mind, our thoughts, and the food that we eat halal. And the other great concern, which is called the sixth part of the keeping of roza, is after keeping roza to have this concern and fear whether it is accepted by Allah or not. Today we, with what we are making daily, the whole day our ghibat, and according to some sahaba and ulama also, that like ghibat breaks the roza, like eating food and drinking water. Though that is not the accepted view, the general accepted ijma and unanimous view is, it doesn't break the roza, but it renders that roza with no profits. Nothing, you get nothing if you are lying when you talk and making, keeping roza, you are backbiting. You are speaking evil things at the workplace, flirting around with girls, women, etc. And all the terrible things you are talking. And so that roza has got no value. Your roza is done basically. You kept your roza, but that roza got no value whatsoever. So like that we have to see. And for us we should take it at another level. The roza of the eyes. If I look around everywhere, what I talk, what I hear, music, etc. Or na mahram, non-mahram woman, and I'm hearing their voices, etc., all that. That, though it doesn't break the roza as such, but it renders the roza without any value. And we should also think that what a great ibadat roza is. If our iman breaks, for Allah save us all. If we did something, we said something, by which our iman is nullified, then what is the thing? Renew it again. Again, you read your kalima, you accept the truth. If your namaz is nullified, we did something which breaks namaz. So your namaz is broken, start again, make your namaz. Your zakat is nullified because you gave it from haram sources. Or after giving it, you did ihsan jatan. You tell the person, I help you, I'm doing this for you. So you have nullified. Though the zakat is still paid, but the sawab is gone and now you are liable for guna. But just correct, make tawbah from the wrong you did. Your hajj is nullified. In most cases, it's a dhamm. And sometimes the dhamm, the penalty of a huge and big animal. It's very seldom that the hajj is completely nullified. And if it is also, you make again hajj. Or if anything nullifies your hajj, you lost your iman. then you accept Islam again, then you have to make your Hajj again. For all these things, that was the penalty. But for Rosa, if you nullify your Rosa, 60 Rosas you have to keep. So it's not that you just keep one more Rosa. But see, if you broke your Rosa, all the details are there, when only Kafara, when Qadha is necessary. But for Rosa, intentionally you break it, 60 Rosas you have to keep. So we can imagine that what's the value of Rosa. That Allah has ordered that you must keep 60 consecutive, not at random, not few this month, few next month, continuously 60 Rosa. So how valuable Rosa is. So we should be very careful. And the things that don't actually break the Rosa, but nullify the value of the Rosa, that also we must be very careful. What we see with our eyes, with our tongue, with our ears, and our thoughts, etc., and then the food that we eat. So to have that concern. And this is for all amal, we should have this worry. Today, very sadly, my ustad, Hafiz Muhammad Sallu Sahib Rahmatullahi, my maktab ustad, and I was very fortunate that after I completed my studies, I started teaching with Hafiz Sahib. He was our principal. And he was my neighbor. And neighbor of such a way, just that not a solid brick wall in between the two houses. What you call that? Just the Masonite board. That was all. So close we were. And many years I got the opportunity to stay with his doctor, and he was a great Allah wala. And he was bad to Hazrat Mawlana Tanwi Rahmatullahi. So of the many things that we learned from Hazrat, one he said that like when namaz is finished, people are going out of the masjid now, and someone is coming in, and that person asks, namaz is over. We say, yes, namaz is finished. Namaz is over. He say, namaz is over. Namaz is finished. But did you have the worry, is my namaz accepted or not? That is a worry we must have with every amal. That is, if accepted or not. A person became an alim 6-7 years he studied. Became a hafiz 3 years, 4-5 years it took him. The end, jalta, all happiness, all congratulating. But we should be sitting with the worry, is it accepted by Allah or not? Otherwise, 6-7 years, and if it's not accepted by Allah, it's nothing. Mawlana Chanvi Rahmatullah Ali says that if you are running a Darul Uloom of 10,000 students, but it's not accepted by Allah, it's not zero, it's negative. And if you are running a Darul Uloom with 5 students just in the one room of your house, but it's accepted by Allah, that is 100%. That is everything. So that concern, Ibrahim ibn Adham rahmatullah alayhi, after his namaz, he should put his hands on his face. Somebody asked him why. He says, I fear that my namaz will be thrown back at me again. It's rejected and it's made in the form of a dirty, black, stinking rag. And it's now with this announcement, that rag terms makes this announcement, as you destroyed me, may Allah destroy you also. So it's our namaz like that, our rozas like that. So we kept the rozas, but we have that concern. Each night, now no more rozas tomorrow, it's each night. But who of us got that worry that night? 29 days we kept rozas, 30 days we kept rozas, but are they accepted or not? If we have that fear, one is pride will never come in that person. He can do the greatest work in the world, the whole world can praise him, but he's afraid. Our Shaykh Rahmatullah Ali says, he has prepared, Hazrat was gifted with poetry. I've prepared one poem and I kept it reserved for the day of Qiyamah. When I pass there, then I will say this poem. So we are really celebrating. And how is the height of the stupidity? The students haven't graduated, sir. Not even the outward graduation and the outward passing of exam, but they are already having doubts. Celebrating already before the results come out. So you can only celebrate when you know you have passed. So before that already they are celebrating. So all the celebration like this is not part of our system in the least way. We should be having that concern. Al-ibratu bil-khawatim. The result of things are how they come to an end. And the real end will be, we'll see by Allah. Where if it's accepted, it is everything. Till then, nobody can boast, I kept so many rozas, I kept such quality rozas, I made so many namazes, so many khatams of Quran. For other reasons, perhaps if it's necessary, we can say, but we can't be happy and boastful about it. We don't know. So whether our actions are accepted, whether this roza is accepted, that is also an important part to make a perfect roza. And that's what all ibadah, what all our ibadah also, that we must do it, is it the correct thing that I'm doing? In our wudu, if we're not washing the ankles, we're not washing the elbows, and now the whole night we're making tahajjud, but that is nothing. If our niyat is not right, our niyat is to show everyone that I stay awake the whole night, then that is nothing. So our amal actions must be correct one. Second is that what doing it correctly, we must have the concern it must be the best. You eat, for example, food, healthy food, but which is the most healthiest? You eat tasty food, which is the most tastiest? Everything, which is the best? So ibadah also, the best ibadah. As a person, he settles for a cheap watch, it's sufficient for me, it does my work, I can see my time. But you can get a better watch, and you can get a watch with so many features. What that watch can do, your whole phone can be in there, your camera can be on your phone, so many things, but do you need it? So our ibadah also, we made our ibadah, but to make the best ibadah. And this is what we need. Yeah, we should have that concern. More than I'm worried, what kind of clothes I wear. My clothes also, I'm worried, not only that it's not white, it's off-white. That also is not good enough for me. It must be white, shining white. And my clothes must have no crease in it. My wife has to iron it always. Even the rumal we wear on top, and that little of the shawl, that little like a bead, that must also show properly. And we wear our amama also, but that also in style. And we fasten it in front of the mirror, and we look at ourselves from this angle and from that angle, that is it right or is it not right? It must be the most impressive. Much more than that, we have to worry of our amal. But who of us could give the verse a Quran Sharif tilawat, our tajweed, even a good person with good tajweed, but when it comes to the crux and you have to read, now are you just reading and you forgot all your tajweed rules? When you are reading in front of a whole gathering, you paid attention to what details as far as tajweed is concerned. And also that which we should learn also, to read Quran Sharif in the best way, and what detailed rules in tajweed there are. And we as ordinary people, we can't even understand it. Not only the makharij, then the sifat of the alphabet. How does an alphabet, and in one word, 5 alphabets, 7, 8 alphabets, and every alphabet must be pronounced, not only according to its makharij, but all the sifat. So it's a whole big issue. But if it's not done for Allah's pleasure, and all the amal, our namaz, has also got lot of sifat, just like the tajweed has got so much of detail in it. All the other amal also have got detail. But there we just want to stick a good qari who reads so beautiful Quran Sharif, and he knows his rules and the fine points of tajweed he adheres to. But when it comes to other amal, then we don't want to pay attention to any of the rules. And we know that the tajweed and all that is just the outward. The inside is the lillahiyah, the sincerity, reading it for Allah's pleasure. That is the most important thing. And more than what people can get infected with the outward words is with the inside. How much one person reads namaz, qiraat he makes, or he's reading qiraat, reading Quran Sharif. One is reading to impress the people with his voice. And today is the thing, a great qari is known why of his long breath. And that doesn't feature anywhere. The longer the breath, then you see him, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Because he read one duha in one breath. He read all alhamd in one breath. So we are impressed with that one breath. and one is a qari who reads, and you did the pronunciation, the rules of tajweed that he applied. The one is his voice, what a melodious voice he's got. Whereas the real and the beautiful voice of the Quran is that, that in which you can make of fear of Allah Ta'ala. The fear of akhirat when he reads. That is the voice. Hazrat Maulana Muhammad Umar Saab Palanpuri Rahmatullah used to say, we get impressed with that qari who puts his hands on his ears, and sometimes one hand also. And he pulls his face in a very, very ugly way also. And then he brings it out. That is a great qari. He said, a qari is that, like when the Sahaba, when conquering Baitul Muqaddas, they were stationed in one place, and their Jamaat Namaz was in another place, there where he made their Musalla. And in between, they put their Christian girls with all the most beautiful girls, with all their jewelry. But the Amir appointed a qari to read, وَقُلْ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ يَغُضُّوا مِنْ أَبْصَارِهِمْ, and they passed through that they didn't even from the corner, remotest corner of the eye, look at any of those girls. And when those girls were asked, so many days these people standing, and they didn't even look at you, forget touching you or trying to have a relationship with you, and they were given the orders, if anyone touches you, wants to take your jewelry, allow him, wants to touch you, wants to do anything with you, let him do it. But they didn't, you see, we were like this wood, like the branches of the tree. They didn't even look at us. Their Qari's effect had that. So that is what is called. So our rozas must also become like that. All our ibadat also. So that is another very important aspect. A few more things also to discuss on that, which we will discuss inshallah. That our rozas, our ibadat, we must have that worry whether it's accepted. It must be correct. It must be the best. And it must be accepted by Allah and permanently accepted. We'll discuss that also inshallah. Subhanallah. Thank you.